Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something that's, well, right at the heart of technology, geopolitics, and sovereignty.
That's right. We're looking at the future of Europe's digital strategy.
And we've gone through a stack of sources on this, focusing on U.S. big tech's influence, especially in Germany.
And our mission for you, the listener, is to really dig into this provocative idea that some of our sources are putting forward, this concept of digital colonization.
And to figure out if Europe actually has the ability or even the will to push back.
Exactly.
So what kicked all this off was this huge news about Google. They've committed, what was it, 5.5 billion euros.
A massive number.
Yeah.
5.5 billion for Germany, for new data centers, new locations in Berlin, Frankfurt, Munich.
On the surface, that just sounds like a great thing, right? Modernization, investment, a huge win for the economy.
That's the official story, absolutely. But the sources we're looking at are, well, they're extremely skeptical.
Skeptical how?
They point out that this isn't just an investment. It's bundled with these deep, long-term cooperation agreements with German government bodies.
Okay, like who?
We're talking about the Federal Office for Information Security, that's the BSI, Germany's main cybersecurity agency, and even the German armed forces.
Wow. Okay, and here's where the language gets really pointed.
It does.
The sources don't frame this as a partnership. They call it digital colonization. That is such a strong, loaded term. Before we just accept that, is it really colonization? Or is this just, you know, aggressive market competition where the biggest player wins? How do they even justify that?
They justify it by shifting the focus. It's not about the money, it's about the control. It's about the long-term dependency it creates.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
So what's the argument?
The parallel they draw is with China's Belt and Road Initiative.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's the same strategic playbook. Whoever builds and operates the infrastructure, they're the ones who control the flow of data, of value, and ultimately, they control the dependency.
So that 5.5 billion isn't just capital for Germany.
No, not really. It's an investment in a strategic lock-in for Google. One that's designed to last for, say, 20 years. Maybe more.
So how does that lock-in actually work? How does an investment become, you know, a dependency for an entire country?
The sources break it down into these four interlocking levels.
Okay.
First, you have the physical infrastructure, the data centers. That creates structural dependency.
The actual hardware on the ground.
Exactly.
Right.
Then second, they push their proprietary cloud platforms, their services, that gets embedded in government agencies and creates organizational dependency.
Right, because everyone gets trained on it. All the processes are built around it.
Precisely. Yeah. Third, you get locked into their specific AI models. The whole national strategy starts to rely on foreign tech, that strategic dependency.
And the last one, I'm guessing, is the most critical.
By far. The integration with the BSI, with the military, that creates security policy dependency. Once your national security is running on foreign-owned infrastructure, your ability to switch, to pivot, it's basically zero.
The irony here is just, it's so thick. You read about Germany's goal of creating a sovereign cloud, but they're doing it with a U.S. big tech company. It's like asking for independence while you hand over the keys to the kingdom.
That is the exact paradox. The sources just hammer home again and again. They use this really sharp analogy.
What is it?
Say, we want sovereign agriculture. That's why Monsanto is now running our fields.
Wow.
The point is, sovereignty only exists on paper. The core infrastructure, the OS, the AI models, the security architecture, it's all still foreign owned. Just because the server's in Frankfurt doesn't mean you control it.
But couldn't Google argue that, look, Europe just doesn't have the capital or the speed to do this on its own? Is this really a choice, or is it just an unavoidable reality?
And that's the core question, isn't it? The sources would argue it's much more about big tech's market strategy than any kind of altruism.
So it's just market protection.
Market protection, pure and simple. Germany is the biggest economy in the EU, huge purchasing power. Microsoft is already deeply embedded there, so Google is responding to that pressure. And with the new EU AI Act getting stricter, making yourself indispensable now is a brilliant move to lock in market share before any real alternative can get off the ground.
That makes a lot of sense from their perspective. Okay, so let's pivot. If the risks are so clear, why on earth are European politicians going along with this? What's broken?
This is where the diagnosis gets really sobering. The sources talk about a toxic mix of systemic failures that have been going on for like two decades.
And they actually try to quantify it, right?
They do, which is startling. They put numbers to the problem.
Let's get into that. 40% is a huge place to start.
40%. The biggest chunk they bluntly label as incompetence.
Just straight up incompetence.
Yes. A political and administrative elite that is, and I'm quoting here, completely technologically underqualified.
What does that actually look like?
Think of government ministers who, the sources claim, literally need help just to answer an email. They're trying to run a digital world with a completely analog mindset. Digitalization is something they have to manage, not something they can strategically shape.
A total lack of technical literacy at the top. Okay, what's the next biggest piece? 25%.
That's cluelessness, which they say is even worse.
How is it worse?
It's not knowing what you don't know. So when these decision makers are faced with a technical choice, they delegate. They bring in the big external consulting firms.
In those firms.
They almost always default to U.S. tech. It's the best practice. It's the safe choice. So the clueless delegate to people who are paid to recommend American products. It's a closed loop.
And what about just not seeing the bigger picture?
That's the next 20%. Ignorance. The failure to see technology as a lever of geopolitical power. They just see it as a utility, you know, like electricity. The thinking is the cloud is the cloud as long as it works. They're completely missing the sovereignty angle.
Which leaves 15% for, what was it, resignation? That sounds like the most damaging attitude of all.
It is the most dangerous. It's the mentality of, oh, we missed the boat. We can't do it alone anymore. So let's just get the Americans to do it for us.
And they try to justify it.
They do. It's self-deception disguised as pragmatism. They say, well, the provider has a server in the EU, so that's sovereign enough. But the sources say the root cause is even deeper.
Go on.
Europe never truly wanted to digitalize because real digitalization threatens all the old hierarchies, the established bureaucracies, and this deep cultural need for security through, well, through inertia.
So they're basically clinging to the old analog world because the digital one is risky and threatens their control.
That's the bitter truth of it. But that brings up a really important question.
Which is,
if Europe's failure is so systemic, are there actually any viable alternatives? Does Europe have its own high-quality tech right now? Or is Google a necessary evil?
That's the paradox, isn't it? Because the counter-narrative in these sources is powerful. It says Europe has all the building blocks for a sovereign digital stack.
It has everything. It's just invisible, it's fragmented, it's not integrated.
And the governments writing the checks don't even see it.
Exactly. Europe could have had a fully integrated, superior alternative years ago. So let's actually look at that hidden stack. Let's highlight some of these world-class EU solutions.
Okay, let's start with the engine room. Orchestration, automation, the stuff you need for advanced AI.
Right. For that, you have N8AN out of Berlin. This thing is an engine for running complex AI agent swarms, automating workflows. The source calls it world-class, even better than competitors like Zapier or Make.
Better how?
Because you can self-host it. You have total control. It's perfect for building sovereign AI systems, something the U.S. competitors just don't really allow.
Okay, then what about the basic tools, the things developers use every single day?
That would be JetBrains. Their headquarters is in Amsterdam. They're one of the most powerful developer tool makers on the planet, and they're completely independent of U.S. big tech.
So true engineering expertise, but with a European DNA.
A very European independent DNA, yes.
What about collaboration? That's an area where the U.S. giants seem to rule.
But there are options. There's Concept Board from Stuttgart.
I've heard of them.
It's cited as the best Miro killer in Europe, and it's GDPR native. That means it was built from the ground up to follow EU data rules with servers in Germany. Your sensitive data never leaves.
And then the big one, the hot topic, AI models. It feels like it's just OpenAI and Google.
But it's not. Europe has real contenders. Mistral AI in France is probably the strongest EU player right now.
They're doing amazing work.
High performance models and crucially open weights. Mm-hmm. That makes them perfect for sovereign, customizable AI projects. Mm. You also have Elif Alpha in Germany, focusing on explainable enterprise-grade AI.
And all of this has to run somewhere, the actual cloud infrastructure.
And you have great options there too. Hetzner in Germany, which is known for just an incredible price-to-performance ratio. Then you have the French players, Scaleway and OVH Cloud.
And these are true sovereign cloud providers.
Absolutely. Suitable for government, for healthcare, for any regulated industry. If you put all of that together, you have a completely U.S.-free foundation that is stable, scalable, and ready to go.
Which just brings us back to that question. If the technology is world-class, if it's mature and available, Why are European governments ignoring it and just defaulting to U.S. big tech? It's clearly not a technology problem.
It's not. And now we have to circle back to those structural roadblocks. The sources point to three filters that just stop EU innovation in its tracks.
Okay, what's the first one? Let's start with where the money flows, the consultants.
It's the consultant lobby filter, and it's all about the profit margin. Big firms Accenture, Deloitte, KPMG, they systematically push U.S. platforms. Azure, AWS, Microsoft 365, because that's where they make their money. On massive standardized integration projects, training, expensive certification programs that are all tied to the U.S. giants.
Ah, I see.
If a government agency uses a smaller EU-native solution like NAN, the big consultants earn dramatically less on service contracts. So they're financially incentivized to advise against the sovereign option.
So the system is rigged against the EU innovator from the very start. What about the bureaucracy itself?
That's the second filter. Public procurement law. It's designed to kill innovation. The German legal framework, for instance, it prioritizes these huge 300-page security reports and formalities over actual tech quality.
So a startup can't compete.
A European startup, no matter how good its tech,
yeah,
just cannot afford to produce those massive compliance packages that the U.S. giants have an entire team creating. The whole system just rewards size and inertia.
And that bureaucracy feeds right into what you mentioned earlier, this institutionalized culture of fear.
Exactly. That's the third and most dangerous roadblock. In German politics especially, mistakes are toxic. They end careers.
So if you're a politician...
If you're a politician and you pick a small German cloud company for a project and it fails, it's a national scandal. You're on the news, your career is over.
But if you pick a U.S. giant...
If Azure or AWS fails, it's a global incident. It's seen as beyond anyone's control. So choosing the standard U.S. solution is political self-protection. It rewards playing it safe, even if it sells out long-term sovereignty.
This has been a really, really deep analysis. So the problem for Europe isn't a lack of tools.
Right.
It's a failure of connection, of integration, and just a total lack of political will to fight these old, profitable systems.
The synthesis is this. Europe doesn't need to invent something new. It desperately needs an orchestration framework. It needs a unifying story.
Something to tie it all together.
Something to make all these great, mature EU components, NAN, JetBrains, Mistral work together to make them easy to deploy for a government agency or a small business. The building blocks are all there. It's the blueprint and the political courage that are missing.
The sources suggest that this change, this European digital stack, it won't come from politicians. It has to be forced into existence by the innovators, by the users themselves. So if Europe already has all the pieces it needs, from the cloud to the AI to the dev tools, what concrete political or commercial action could create that one single compelling story that finally overcomes all this bureaucratic fear and makes the sovereign EU-native option the obvious standard choice for every public contract? That's the strategic question we want to leave you with.